the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California. Let's.
Hi.
How are you? Welcome.
Thank you. How Welcome. Are you? Nice to meet you like this.
I know. We have been connecting, you know, virtually forever or via Messenger. Thank God for Messenger, right?
Yes. Thank God. Let me just make myself comfortable here.
Oh, absolutely. Make myself comfortable. I had to get something to drink and...
Yes.
So how are you holding up?
Everything is good, thank you. It's good, you know, everybody's well, and thank God, you know. How about you and your family?
I got into a little kerfuffle with the kid, with my daughter. She's got to move back home, you know, because of COVID, and it's so expensive.
Yes.
But my mother is 91, and wow. She says, well, you know, why is it okay for me to go hang out with my friends, but for them not to come over? I said, well, you're a grown woman. I can't really dictate where you go, but I can still control who comes here. And it's not that they're bad people. They're wonderful people. But right, I've got a 91-year-old mother.
Well, she's just younger, you know. Huh?
What do I do? How do I bridge the gap there to make her happy and to make her comfortable, because this is her home, but I can't, you know, I can't run the risk. What do I do? Where's the balance?
The balance is, I guess, your boundaries, if that's simply what is okay with you and what is not okay with you. If that's not okay with you, you just say it in the most loving way,
I did. She hung up crunchy. She was still mad. But, you know, I told her, I said, you know, in all honesty, I'm making room for you. I mean, I've had to shift my office. My office is now going to be her bedroom. I don't have an office. We're having a contractor come and remodel, which is great. But that's a huge expense. And I want to make her happy. But, you know, everybody's got to sacrifice.
Yes, a little bit. Or... you can thrive in other ways, maybe, like whatever is good for all of you. Maybe she can just have one part for herself, one part of the.
Well, that's what we're doing. We got the contractor to, you know, make. Yeah.
That's wonderful of you. That's great of you.
I don't know. It's gonna cause me to drink more apple juice.
Hey, is that bad? That's not bad at all.
It's not bad at all. Uh-oh. So thank you so much for being here on the Edge with me and my brains, Helena. But yes. I can't pronounce your last name. How do you pronounce it?
Spasovsky. Yes.
Spasovsky. Okay. That's kind of saucy. So thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to have you here to talk about your amazing book and all the things wonderful. Introduce yourself to my brains.
Hi, everybody. My name is Yelena Spasovsky, and I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much. Any time I can talk and help people is wonderful for me. Any opportunity I look forward to. So thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. You're a woman with an incredible story. You've overcome cancer and, you know, you're a thriver. So tell my brains a little bit about your story.
So all of us have a story, of course, and every life is worth a book, you know, and putting it in a book. So I kind of decided to do that for myself because, I don't know, it was just something I wanted to do. And more so because I wanted to help others just the way I was helped when I had a lot of, you know, ups and downs in my life. So I know I wouldn't have done it, you know, successfully without the help of the community. And it's really, really important. So that's why I wanted to do it too. And remember, like for Martin Luther King, when he was talking to the little segregation there, to his little church, he didn't know that his words will reverberate for years to come, and the people will be listening. So you never know who you can inspire, and you never know who you can help, and this is, you know, this is why I do this. And I'm sure that's why you do what you do.
I do. And it's a labor of love. Absolutely. Yes. And so I'm glad for your bravery, and I'm happy for your recovery. Can you tell my brains a little bit about your journey with cancer?
So I was 40, and that was about 6 years ago. And I had my second mammogram, and, you know, they told me that it was like third stage breast cancer. So I was really, you know, surprised and in shock, because I was living a kind of a healthy lifestyle, you know, and eating well and all of that. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I didn't do anything. So it was a surprise to all of us, and not to mention the shock, you know. So the shock was horrendous. You know, since that moment on, I just wanted to do, to see what I can do to get better. First, you're just in such shock that, you know, it can happen that you just freeze. You know how in shocking situations in life, our primitive brain, you know, does either freeze, flight, fight, or maybe faint too. So I kind of froze, and I just couldn't believe it. And of course, we needed some time to, you know, get to terms with it.
Process it, absolutely, because it's devastating.
It is devastating.
I can't even imagine. And you're going like, this is an awful dream. You're not talking to me.
Yes,
you're talking through me. You're talking about someone else. The realization. So, and then also making the choices on treatment.
Yes, that too. Because
do I do this? Do I do that? What is this? You know, what are the end results from this? You know, because a lot of women have to go through a lot. Reconstructive surgery. Do I live with it? Do I take radiation? Do I take chemo? And then the after effect. You know, the looking at yourself in the mirror for the first time, thinking how you're going to relate to your partner. When you look at your breasts, you know, because women, you know, we are our breasts. We love the twins.
Of course.
They're the nurturers of life.
Yeah.
Look at yourself without them and not feeling whole. And then the pain of the reconstructive surgery, people think, oh, okay, well, they're just going to put some saline bubbles in there and we're going to be okay. But, you know, the lymph nodes, I've got a girlfriend right now that hasn't recovered from it yet. And it's a lot to go on, but the mindset can really kind of help you forge ahead on all of that, and deep meditation and the love of your family and friends. When did you come to that point? I mean, did you kind of go through that the whole time? Did you go back and forth, or was there just one particular time you just had an aha moment?
So what happened to me, I got diagnosed, and I was supposed to start my chemo. First of all, I didn't even know what to do, because it's so overwhelming, all the information that you have. And, you know, do you want to do it holistically? Do you want to use radiation and chemo and everything else that science of the 21st century offers? So I was confused, you know, and I just knew that I really wanted to get well. I really did want. And so what happened was, not only, you know, that kind of struck me, but also my mom, during the kind of 2 months before I was done with my own treatment, with my own chemo, my mom got sick with cancer. Mm-hmm. So that was a blow, another blow. But, as a woman, you know how it is when you think about our mothers. It's just the best. Yes, and I thought that was going to be the worst day of my life when I found out that my mom would be dying, and she had like really just she had about a few months to live, like 3 months to live. So I did not, first of all, even tell her that I was sick, because she's in Serbia. She was in Serbia. And I didn't want my dad and my mom to worry, because I didn't want them to imagine all the horrific things you know, and still in America, it is much more, it is much better, the treatment for cancer patients. It's unimaginable for them over there. So I didn't want them to think that I'm, you know, that it's all so horrific for me. And our, you know, family dynamics was such that we hid things from each other. And that was also bad. And I got a chance to address that too. And so that we didn't want to, you know, kind of like worry each other, but that is not how it should be, you know?
Yes. As my mother tells me, we're all going to get a turn at the wheel.
Yes, yes.
You know, and this is hard.
It actually, vulnerability, as we know, it requires a certain courage. It requires courage to say the words, to be there, to you know, just cry together, to share even those feelings together. But, you know, I wasn't taught that growing up. We were taught emotional stoicism and not to share it. And so I never told them that I was sick. I was pretending the whole time.
Let me ask you a question. Was that because you grew up in Serbia and, you know, that was a former communist country where it's a little bit more reserved, or that's just kind of the philosophy of the household?
It was the household thing. My mom was very, very strong, you know, and on the other hand, she was very soft and sweet, and she always did stuff not to worry us. And that was even, you know, worse, because you never knew. After so many kind of lies, I didn't know what to expect, because I always thought that she was hiding something just not to concern me, you know. But then that's what I ended up doing, which, you know, we always repeat the family pattern. But you know, I believe that, you know, God and universe presents you with a problem so you can address it. So I then addressed that part of it. And what happened was, I went to Serbia after my chemo, and she was already very, very sick, and she couldn't really tell that I was what I went through, which she would have told that like immediately if she was okay, but she was already very sick, so she couldn't tell. And so I got that chance to be with her for about 2 months and to say goodbye and to care for her. And it was horrific, as you can imagine, but it was also very beautiful. And I'm going back to the question of yours. It was beautiful. It is where I actually decided to surrender and to just accept what is, because it's our resistance always that makes all the problems. It's not really our emotions, because emotions are hard, and you feel if you face them, you're going to die. But it's not like that. And if you actually you know, resist them, what you resist persists, and we make them even more intense. But I somehow, looking at her and watching her die, basically, and caring for her, I just decided that she I didn't make her. I mean, God made us and universe made us. And it's not up to me to think about what is good or bad for me, quote unquote. It is just that I realized how much beauty is there in that I was really caring for her, because she brought me to this world, you know?
Appreciating in the moment.
Yes.
Again, you had that time. I'm thinking about people right now in COVID-19 that don't have that time. You drop your parent off, or they're at a care facility, and now you have to look at them through a device like this.
Yes,
you don't have the time. So, you know, you were still honored, and you still give a lot of grace.
Yes.
So what has all this taught you, being a parent of two and also being a parent of a child with special needs?
You know, as I said, you never can really tell that something is bad or just good, or it's such a fine and kind of profound dance that we dance here on earth, you know. It was actually the hardest for me was when my daughter was diagnosed, and that was about 11 years. That was really much harder than all of this because I wasn't even ready, and I was just a young mother, you know. And I, when she was diagnosed, it was just really hard for me, and I needed to think and to reach so deep into my creativity, you know, to be able to withstand all that, you know. And then I realized that there is so much we can do. There is so much that we are kind of forced to do when you are put in the corner and there's nowhere else to go. Just like when people say, when you reach the bottom, you can only go up from there because
right.
there's nowhere else to go. You can just either just say, what the hell, and just give up. And otherwise you can just say, you know what, I'm going to reach deep into my creative resources and learn, and maybe, you know, hire people or have friends or just gather people around you, like a whole tribe that we used to have when we were, you know, long, long ago.
Right.
It takes the whole village, as we say, it takes the whole village to get better and to.
But it also takes acceptance, you know, because grief is a process, and grief is not just the loss of a loved one. You know, it could be the loss of a job. It could be the loss of a relationship, loss of your
divorce.
It's a process. It's definitely a process. And so accepting it, because a lot of times people are in denial, you know, for a long time. It takes time to do it.
It does take time. It cannot be done like at once, unless you're, you know, enlightened master or something. But it does take time. And that time is actually what is really valuable for us, because that time is the time when we really grow most.
Exactly.
We don't really want to think about it, because who wants bad things in their lives? Nobody. And once you have nowhere else to go and you have to do it, you just surprise yourself. You just surprise yourself with how much more you can feel and how much more you can do and how much you know and how much you want to know and learn. And where that takes you is somewhere completely different that you wanted to go, but
absolutely.
Nevertheless, you learn, and that's
you started. You've taken all of this knowledge, all of this pain, and pleasure, and you have consolidated into a coaching program, but also in the pages of a book. Tell us a little bit about the book.
My book is called "Know How to Help Your Loved One with Cancer."
Where is your book? Let me see it.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's right here. Let me get it.
We got to see it, brains. Okay.
I know, yes.
She's got to get it. Absolutely. So again, this woman has been through a lot, and there's a lot of us out there that are going through a lot. I think the pages of this book is really going to consolidate and condense a lot of emotions. I think it's going to help you walk through a journey with someone else, that know that you're not alone. Look at that. Know how to help your loved one with cancer. The wholehearted support guide. See, that's what I just told you. It's a support guide.
Yes.
Okay. And that's what we need. We need a foundation, because we feel like our bottom has fallen out. Would you grace us with a little excerpt from your book? I'd love to hear a little reading from your book. Your voice inflection is so beautiful. I think it would really try to help, you know, get somebody, or, you know, through a challenging situation.
Yes, yes. Okay. So maybe the first chapter, just the very beginning. We often like to think that by leading an honest, righteous, and simple life, we will avoid the pain and suffering that befalls other people. We hope that tragedy will never strike in our lives and live doing our usual chores and responsibilities, as the quiet and suppressed little voice in the back of our minds remind us from time to time how fragile we are. When all is going well, the voice is almost poetic and touching. We hear it in songs of loss and love, and stories of bohemians, adventurers, and travelers. However, when the unthinkable happens to us, the pain and anguish of our world feels as though it slashes us with 1,000 knives and thrusts into our hearts. No one can come close to explaining the shock of a cancer diagnosis. the words uttered are like madness. We're besieged with raw grief and sorrow, anticipating the pain and struggle our loved ones and ourselves will go through. How did this happen to someone so dear to us? It is always misfortunes like cancer that happen to other people. We don't have time for this. It is an unwelcome intrusion of something you do not want to invite into your life. And yet here it is, all comfortable and settled in, ready to stay for some time. We can yell and plead, shout and throw our hands in the air, but we have to slowly come to terms with it. We want to wake up to a new reality where all this is just a nightmare. You know that feeling, you get so scared and horrified in the middle of the dark night and wake up sweaty with goosebumps all over. But when you become extremely happy when all of this, that all of the fear was just a bad dream, a nightmare that is all gone now, it's great when you're getting more and more feeble. Then you just get up and go on with your life, go to work, kiss your kids. Cancer is much different, and it is constant. The only voice we can hear now is the one saying she has cancer, referring to the person you love equal to yourself even more. Our pain becomes the mirror of our love, and we suffer because of our connection to the loved one as we courageously open our hearts to another human being in pain. Pain and loss are part of everyone's journey. That is the first Buddhist truth, that life hurts. We can remember the simple losses of our childhood and our heavier losses later in life, like the loss of love, innocence, our divine nature, and eventually the loss of life itself. Grief has a cumulative quality, and once the diagnosis comes, we find ourselves remembering and re-experiencing all of our previous losses at once. We can even get overwhelmed and blow all things out of proportion. On the other hand, sometimes we just want to romanticize the past and remember all the beautiful things and people in our memory. No one is impervious to life's adversities. I experienced the same suffering as my loved one was diagnosed with cancer, and it helped me learn that at least we're all in it together. When we're in pain, the world looks different and makes us feel like we're the only one suffering all alone, but that's not true. There's a Buddhist story about a mother whose young child died. Unwilling to accept his death, she carried his little body from neighbor to neighbor, begging for someone to bring him back to life. One of them told her to go to Buddha and ask him if he had a way of bringing the boy back to life. The mother found Buddha and pleaded with him for help. He instructed her to go back to the village and find a mustard seed from the household of one never touched by death or pain. Buddha promised to make the medicine from the mustard seed she would bring. So she went to the village and began asking. All of the neighbors were willing to give her the seed, but they could not because all of their households had been touched by death and pain. She asked everyone, and day slowly turned into night. She wasn't able to find the mustard seed to collect. The mother went back to Buddha with her grief calmed, accepting her pain as she had a new understanding of suffering.
Oh, that, now see, that was beautiful. That was beautiful. I love how you incorporated that story, you know, because again, it is a part of the process. A lot of parents too, they shield their children from death. They don't allow them to look at the dead body, or they see the body at the memorial service and they'll say, grandma's just sleeping. But what they have to understand that this is a process, because death, you know, is a promise. A lot of children are born stillborn. They don't get to come to this world. But once you arrive, you have to transition. And I'm so glad that you have come to this calming, to this knowing, to the sensibility. And I love your voice inflection. Your reading is beautiful. Did you do the book in audio as well?
I am doing it now. Well, today. Yes. Just now. To process. Yes. Yes. It's a process. Yes.
I mean, you know, because it would be very tranquil for a person just to have their headsets on and hear you walk alongside of them. There's something about an audio. That's, you know, why I love to do podcasting and radio. So tell my brains a little bit about your coaching program and how to get in contact with you.
Okay. So I coach cancer caregivers and My program is called, my business is called Coaching by Jelena, J-E-L-E-N-A. And I actually teach a course from Stanford University. It's a life coaching course that's called CIJ, Clarity Catalyst for Healing. And it's a wonderful course. You know, it's a beautiful course that I love to teach to my students and my clients. And it helps a lot with, you know, going through cancer, going through cancer yourself or the caregiver. Usually I coach caregivers. And it is just beautiful. I'm so grateful for it. I took it myself when I was sick and it made a wonderful difference for me. So then I just really, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. And I got certified and I'm very glad that I did. So my business is called Coaching by Jelena and .com. And you can find me there.
Well, we're going to find you there. We're going to put all your information down there. Yes. And as we close, can you leave us some words of encouragement for a parent? Because not only are you a survivor of cancer, but a caregiver for someone with cancer. But again, you have a child with special needs. Can you give some words of encouragement to individuals that are overwhelmed, that are in this influx of disparity right now,
yes,
to kind of get through and to know that there's, you know, that there's help on the other side? Because I'm a caregiver and it is not for chumps.
Yes.
You know, it's hard. It's stressful. You need to separate yourself. You need to get a break. You do get angry. You do get frustrated.
Oh, yes.
So can you imagine what these people in these care facilities feel about people that they don't know? The
yes.
people that they don't, you know, that they don't have compassion for. So can you leave us with a few words of encouragement?
Of course. I just want to tell everybody that just as you said for death, you said that it's stigmatized. All just like that, our emotions are also made into pathology. We think that emotions, even the dark emotions, are bad and they're pathology and it's horrible to feel them. But if you stay open and just allow yourself to just sit with it and to take deep breaths and to just face it, basically, as we said, resistance creates more resistance. If you just decide to not look at it as pathology, or emotions are actually here to teach us. And I know that everybody who is feeling, you know, horrible, it cannot really grasp that, but try to open your heart and just let it go through you just like a fever would. If you don't resist it, if you sit with it, it will just run its course and it will dissipate. And our ability to just hold that tension and just allow it, basically, will make all the difference. Just breathe in and out and just let yourself sit with your hard to bear emotions. And you will see how wonderful, how unexpected that will feel. That will make all the difference to your life.
Well, I'm ready to feel the feels because it's a lot. And again, you have to know it. You have to live it and experience.
Yes.
Thank you for being here on the edge with me and my brains. You are awesome sauce. I can't wait to hear the audio version of the book.
Yes.
I'll put all of your contact information so that people can contact you, resonate with you, and sit in their heart, because that's all we can do right now. It's not personal, brains. Everybody's going through something.
Yes.
Okay. And if you're not going through something, you're not living, because that's what life is. It's a journey.
Okay.
You know, a lot of hills and a lot of values. Go and subscribe. Helena's page on YouTube. I'm sorry, page on Facebook. Go and purchase her book. I can't, again, like I said, wait for the audio version. Work with her. You know, you don't need a grief counselor. You just need a good, tender ear and some tools to help you get through it. We got a lot of that on the edge. Go and sign up on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, because we're for you. Right here, we are for you on the edge. Here's to you, my sister. Thank you so much for your love and your light.
Thank you. To you too. And I will give everybody a free copy of my book if they come to my site.
What? A free copy of the book? Now look.
E-copy. e-copy.
Okay, e-copy, because I'm going to say, you better run, not walk.
But this again, is for your listeners, for the listeners of the podcast.
But you have nothing else to do, brains, but sit there and absorb information because we're all in quarantine.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.